The Shadows from the Tree, the podcast that invites you to explore the curious world of dark genealogy, uncovering secrets, scandals, crimes, and darker events that shape family trees. Whether you're a seasoned genealogist, just beginning to explore your family history, a history buff, or even a crime junkie, we offer something for everyone. Join your hosts, Danielle and Michelle, in each episode as we share stories from over a century ago with each other for the first time. This week, it is centered around the theme of bigamy. By using newspaper archives as our guide and conducting research using historical records, we piece together these often forgotten stories and gain a deeper understanding of the challenges those involved faced. Our hopes is to connect you, our listeners, with your ancestors' past, one story at a time. So, welcome. Here we are, season two, episode two. Yeah. And so, we are doing bigamy. And so, for those who don't know, a little definition about bigamy here is a bigamist is a person who enters into a marriage with someone while still legally married to another person, and this act of marrying multiple individuals at the same time is considered illegal in most states, and by law can be punishable.
Yep.
So I'll be curious what your story is and if that hits that quota of going against the law there. So I have my story that I actually found over a year ago when we were doing our family history.
Really?
On Jeanette.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So what we featured at the end of season one, I don't even remember if I was searching the Jeanette story or if I just was searching stories of people married young, because I was just so shocked, really, about that. And I found this one. It was really short, and it just grabbed me. And it's from your preferred time period. So it was 1891 was the article. And it had said this: marriage at the age of 12 years is an unusual thing. Still more unusual is it for a girl to be married three times before she attains the age of 14 years.
What?
Such the story.
Oh,
exists
no.
On Long Island.
Oh my gosh.
So
how's that? How were they? How?
Yes. So gripping, right? You just want to know more. And this, I really found multiple articles, but they all were sort of similar. So it wasn't like too confusing like last episode where I was just lost in so many articles and thoughts.
Right.
But the first thing I wanted to know is like, yeah, well, what happened in her childhood? Right. The questions just start rolling. Yeah,
these parents are not doing their job.
Yeah, exactly. That. And then it's like, okay, well, what happened with the husbands? And then, what happened for her life long term? So that's what genealogy is, right? You start digging in one question at a time and then have more questions and more questions.
The mysteries. Yep.
Yeah. So I found that there is a little bit of discrepancy in her age, but I will first start with her name, Catherine Mott, which she went by Kate most of the time, and then also had a nickname of Kitty.
Okay, that's cute.
And she was born in Long Island, I'm saying about 1867. So that's what's listed on her headstone, 1867. Okay. But the censuses were like all over the place. Like, I don't know, maybe she liked being younger and just, I don't know, maybe she didn't know the age, or whoever was reporting the census truly didn't know her age. And then there was even a newspaper article that said that she would be 22 next November the 14th, and that was written in 1891. So, and then there was another date of her on a lot on Ancestry of being born that December 13th, 1867. So, could not find a birth certificate, unfortunately, but I'm gonna go with 1867.
Was she listed with her parents in the census, or was she kind of an orphan?
Yeah, so good point. So, I find out that her, father is John Rose Mott, and her mother was Abigail Jane. They both had like long-term family parents and grandparents in New York.
Okay.
Are born in New York. And Abigail, the mother, had actually been previously married before she got married to John.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a handful of kids with her husband at the time, whose last name was Smith. And then I finally see Katie is in this record in 1870 census. She's listed as 2 years old, and she's listed with her dad, who's a ship carpenter, and her mom's keeping house. And then she's actually living with her half siblings from her mom's first marriage, Billings Smith, who was 18, and Abigail Smith, who was 10. And then she's listed as being 2. So she appears there. So already the mom's kind of got a handful of kids, right? Widowed, or no longer with the past husband. They're living in Islip, New York, part of Long Island. And then I see her again in 1880 in Rockville, New York. And she's 12 at the time. And her mom, Abigail, is also on the census listed as mother-in-law. And Kate's listed as sister-in-law. So she's living with her half-sister, Susan.
Okay.
And her husband, Will Smith. So she...
Did her dad die then?
So the mom was still listed as married.
Oh.
So I really don't know. And her dad was found at some point on a record living until 1907, till the age of 77 as a widower. So... And he was living in a poorhouse. So, I don't know. Maybe he was somewhere for work. I don't really know. So
he was doing ship carpentry. Right. So, maybe he was on a ship somewhere.
But I just find it weird that Abigail married a Smith previously. And now her daughter, Susan,
married
a Smith.
Okay.
Maybe like.
There's a lot of Smiths.
Dare I say. Right. I or dare I say a cousin. Down the line. So.
Stranger things have happened.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're doing decently, I guess. I mean, I would say probably poverty if the father ended up long-term living in a poor house. The mom has a lot of kids.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we lead into her first marriage, I would say, which is said to be when she was 12 or 13 in Rockville, all happening in New York, to a George Gregory. And... She was said in a newspaper article to have married to escape being driven from home. But then it was also said that she, out of spite, she was going to marry him because his well-to-do citizen parents considered her to be beneath them.
Okay.
So, you know. But he obtained a bill of separation because she then very quickly, I guess, didn't want to be with him and went on to husband number 2.
Oh.
So, and supposedly they never lived together. So there's that
so
one.
So he got a divorce decree or it was just...
That's what it sounded like. I found a couple like records on Ancestry. Mm-hmm. I couldn't pull up the actual file number. It was just the index.
Yeah.
And I could not find his. I found one for the others. So I don't know if they just washed away with it, if never truly was on record.
How legal is it at 12 years old?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. Yeah, why would you do that?
What is happening?
Yes. So then we move on to Frank Fox, who per the...
That's a fun name.
Yeah. Frank Fox. Per the newspaper said that she, again, married him shortly after George. And he was a proud, aristocratic, and wealthy stock.
Ooh,
so
fancy.
You know, maybe she saw something in that. But soon after, he was also successful in obtaining a divorce, the newspaper mentions, due to her age. And they also supposedly never lived together.
Mm. Where is she then?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, we never lived together.
I know. I just hit the 1880, so it was just like, oh, I wish I could have a couple more details here. So then we move on to the more important husband number 3, Lincoln Nugent. So he was characterized as being a well-behaved lad. His parents regretted him marrying her, but they decided to support them and gave them a good home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was listed that they had a first child together, but it was born deceased. And then they had another child together, Anneli Nugent, born in that Islip on July 9, 1887.
Okay.
So they go off, you know. It sounds like they're going to
be committing to each other. So they live together.
Yeah, they actually live together. They have a child together. So this one's a little bit more concrete.
Right.
So it was after, like, giving birth and after living with him for 2 years, she became dissipated, it said, and left her home and returned to Bayshore a wreck, it said.
Oh, no.
You know, so it's hard. Young mother, you know. So it was there when she was back home that she met John Deere, and not just the tractor. It said he was a mixed Indian who was traveling with an Indian show, and she decided to follow him. And she made it to Baltimore, Maryland, where she left due to his abuse. And it even said that people in the show gave her money to make it back because they saw the abuse that was happening. So that didn't last a super long time. Meanwhile, Nellie, the child, shows up on a document as an inmate of a poorhouse in Suffolk, New York, on February 23, 1889. She's aged 1 year and 1.5 years old. It says, habits of father, bad. This was written in. Habits of mother, bad.
Oh, boy.
The occupation of the dad at the time, it said, was a paper hanger. I didn't look it up, but I'm thinking, like, wallpaper? Do they have wall? I don't even know what paper hanger was being.
Who knows?
So, paper hanger, and she was listed as a housekeeper. And the child, there was a note at the very bottom that said the child had been brought by the overseer of Islip to town to having been left by its parents.
So she had already taken off and left the baby?
At this point she had taken off and went back on to that Indian traveling show, I suppose. So there was that. And then, not to jump ahead, but long term, Nellie was supposedly raised by her uncle George Nugent.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly she went off and got married, and you know, so good for her.
She got saved. That's good.
By the uncle. And so then this is where we get to now our case of bigamy. So she goes, Katie goes to marry Oliver Petty in January of 1891 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So they had run off together. At the time, they were introduced because she was living in a boarding house with John Allen, who was a wealthy farmer and a horse jockey. So they introduced them, and yeah, they took off together and got married.
Mm-hmm.
He was younger than her, only about 19, 20. So he did it against his parents' knowledge, and that's when the dad, Mr. Petty, started digging around and finding out what's really happening with this woman that he's going running
about.
How would
they do digging back then?
I don't know.
Not even in the
same. Well, all these people are living in Suffolk, New York. So they're all part of Long Island.
Oh. All right. So I think probably like Rhode Island. Yeah. You know, where like exactly. Everyone knows everybody.
Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of that going on. And Lincoln Nugent actually drives to Mr. Petty's house and starts telling him everything he knows about her.
Mm-hmm.
Even saying that she was arrested for drunkenness and fighting. And that's when they both together said, let's go for her. And they went to who they needed to go to say, yep, we're going to go against her for bigamy. Because they, I guess technically Lincoln never did divorce or unmarry her. So it actually goes to court.
Oh, wow.
And she is arrested shortly after her and Petty run off to get married on January 19th, 1891. Mm-hmm. They're found at the Shelbourne Hotel, and Constable Kogel and Officer James White arrest her at 3:30 on Saturday morning. And they didn't have time to get the warrant signed because it was late, so they just arrested her on being a suspicious character. So they take her in the morning. She goes to Yorkville Police Court and is turned over to Kugel after his warrant was signed. And then Justice Buckingham had arranged to have the hearing at Smith's Hotel and allowed like a half a dozen citizens in before Kugel like locked the door and made this lie that they wanted a private hearing. Which is like, come on, I could have gotten like a photo or something.
Right.
So that happens. And then after the hearing, she was informed she could go and get procure counsel she wanted. And she telegraphed a lawyer, Nicol of Babylon. So January 20, 1891, the next day they have the bail hearing. And her bail was set for $2,000, which she did not have. So she went to Riverhead Jail. So then they eventually go to have like the hearing, which wasn't until June 2nd of 1891. So she's being held at this jail because she didn't have the bail for like 6 months.
It's sad.
A little less because I guess it was January 20th. Yeah, but still, you're just waiting. Poor girl. I just have sympathy for the young people who don't know better. Like, she really, So they have the hearing, and it was quoted by the newspaper that the woman quietly removed her veil and looked about the room, apparently very unconcerned. Not a blush or a sign of nervousness was noticed for about a half an hour, and then her eye moistened slightly, but the tears were carelessly brushed away, and she resumed the same unconcerned appearance.
Oh, boy.
Probably just used to hiding her feelings.
Right?
So,
And was she actually crying her eyes out and they just said
true
that in the paper?
Right. I know. You never know. No. To be in court those days would have been, it would have been great. Goodness. Eventually, as there was a couple hearings, they did let more people, and then like a crowd started to grow around the case. But the person representing her, you know, had said that just the whole thing, like she was married at 12 and... Like, it was said that a lot of the men had a lot of sympathy for her as, like, her being the victim.
That's good.
If that's something. So, Wilmot Smith defended her. Again, Smith. Maybe a cousin related to Abigail's past or her now half-sister's family.
Right.
He says that she was born into misfortune and she had a beautiful, sweet face, but her early training was neglected. She never knew the kindness of a mother's care and guidance. In her infancy, she became a ward of charity, and how little she knew of the work or the right and wrong of social laws at that time of 12. She married a second time without the formality of a divorce at the age of 13 and divorced and married a third time before she was 14 years of age. She's very ignorant, and her beauty made her a target for designing cruel men.
Hmm. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good defense to me.
So, at the time of the court, two of her former husbands were in the court, and they were both under the influence of...
Alcohol.
And one of them interrupted the proceeding twice and had to be taken in charge by the sheriff.
Classy.
Lincoln Nugent was the first witness, and he could... He was, whether it was the alcohol or not, he couldn't really say whether he was married to her or not. He kept on making these weird, like, oh, I don't remember comments. But it's like, out of everyone, that's the one husband. Like, they have a kid together. You live with the parents.
And it was, like, a couple years. How do you not remember? Yeah,
it's weird. So then Sarah Mapes gets called to the stand. She's a bridesmaid at the Nugent wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And she's known Kate for 12 years. So... She calls and she says, yeah, I was a witness to the marriage that was performed. Like, I was there and watched it happen. The bride was about 14 or 15 and had been living after with the family. So, and I think it was even reported that she behaved well, like a lady, when she was living with them.
How much older was
he than her? Do I have the age of him? I'll have to try to pop that one up. I think they were, like, slightly older. It wasn't anything shocking. Okay. Like, I was blown
kind of
away.
Picturing, like, an old kind of gross.
I remember I did look at the ages, but I don't remember being, like, shocked completely. And then there was a second witness to the Nugent wedding. I love this name. His name was Mortimus Bilas.
Nice.
That's a great one, huh?
It's unique.
Yeah. So... He kind of just he said she appeared to be 13 or 14 and just said I was there. And then they call Oliver Petty to testify. And he said they had gotten married only after 10 days of, like, I guess, meeting. And, you know, they had the reverend's name of who married them. And he actually had, you know, confirmed that they had been married. So this goes on, and then the jury couldn't agree, so they dismissed the woman back to jail. Yeah.
It wasn't, like, a mistrial, because the jury couldn't agree? They just threw her back
to jail.
In jail.
Yeah. Oh, so
that's different.
Yeah. So while Petty was still, you know, on her side, he said, if the cases do end up being dropped, I will, you know, she'll still be my wife, whatever. So he was kind of sticking by her. And one newspaper even said that they had half a honeymoon because they pretty much were arrested
in the middle of the night.
So
it's awful.
Yeah. So then the next date I see is that Petty actually ends up applying for a divorce, which he was granted in July 28 of 1891. So not even a month later, he's changed his tune, right?
That's not very patient. Yeah. Thanks, guy.
Yeah, definitely. But finally, December 8, 1891, it's a long time.
Yeah.
Long time. So she has her case back, and the Times Union in Brooklyn, New York posted in the newspaper that it was that she was convicted of bigamy at the Suffolk County Court at Riverhead at noon and was sentenced to imprisonment for 1 year in the Kings County Penitentiary. So she had to...
A whole another year?
She had to go... Yeah, she had to be in jail for a year. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like she... Although she was in Riverhead, so maybe she got to stay where she was. And it was actually really interesting. I found, like, the record of the King's, I'm just pulling up here, the King's County Jail, mm-hmm. and, like, the name of all the people who got put in for jail that year, or you the times near her. There? Yeah, she's on there. It's listed as bigamy, and, you know, it even shows that it's one year. So I'm looking, I'm like, oh, my, who has the worst amount of time, and for what? Like, a lot of little things, like larceny, there's one for drunken disorderly, so there was a couple. Nothing. I scanned a few pages and I did not see bigamy. Serial killers. Ooh, was there? There was some kind of assault. Yeah, there was. Where did I see that one?
Maybe it was like a
assault
lull.
Third.
Oh, that's
assault third got 3 years.
Hmm. It was like a low security or something. I don't know if they had different levels back then.
Yeah, but I could have just spent time like going through this whole thing. I was like, wow, this is really interesting.
It really does baffle me, all the records that were kept in the 1800s.
Seriously, like, how old is this record and they're keeping it?
Yeah.
And now we get to use it, right?
And it's all digitalized now, which is really helpful. Easy to find stuff, you know? Like,
definitely.
You couldn't have done this 10 years ago either.
No, definitely not. So, so she goes to jail, and on December 9, 1893, she is released on good behavior for 2 months early, basically. And she's in her 30s, and she goes back to living with her mom at Wading River. And it says her good looks and fine dress is soon drew admirers.
Oh no.
Yeah, there was a few names dropped there about who was, you know, trying to pursue her.
How many would have, is that fifth?
No. So then she actually settles down or gets officially married again to a husband, George Benjamin Horton. This is about 1892, so like probably, I don't know if like was before or right after she got out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
But this was her longest marriage. She was with him until he died in 1925 at the age of 57, 58.
That one stuck.
Yeah, they had two children together. There was a note in the newspaper that, like, he wasn't good looking, but had good money or something.
I don't know.
Who's the judge here?
He was homely, and then she was the most beautiful lady in the village.
It's crazy. It's just,
they always do that.
It's crazy. So they get married. They have children together. So it seems they did decently together.
Well, she was an adult with, you know, her fully developed brain at that point.
True. Could actually think clearly.
Yeah.
And got targeted for a crime that she really probably had to think about a lot.
Right.
So he dies in 1925 and she remarries.
Goodness gracious.
And so she remarries John Wheatley on October 1, 1929, and he was 45 and she was 55 on the marriage certificate or the marriage license, and she was listed as a nurse. So maybe she got a nice career, and they were also still living in Long Island, Port Jefferson. So, so they were together, and it was interesting because on this certificate it says number of proposed marriages, and she has second.
So she only said she had two marriages.
So maybe she's considering just the longest husband?
Right, I mean.
Yeah, at that point, just erase your whole.
She just stopped marrying people and maybe just date them.
Yes.
If that was even allowed. But it didn't seem like she had much guidance in life. Yeah,
no. So hopefully she, you know, did decently. I, again, I wish we were here for like to actually see the personality and the day-to-day life of people. And her children, you know, she had the one daughter, Nellie, who lived to 108.
Wow.
And her other son, George, died at 54. And Benjamin Horton, her other son, died at like 83. Hmm. And as for the husbands, couldn't find much on George Gregory, what happened to him afterwards. But Fox, there was a newspaper clipping that he died in Jersey City in December of 1893, so not long after, noted as a spendthrift, having wasted three legacies of some $20,000 each.
Whoa.
He had several wives, and it said one including Kate. Long Island is where his dad owned a summer residence, which is probably how they connected at the time. And then Lincoln Newgate died at 54 in 1916. New York, so not again, not long after.
Right.
He never appeared to remarry or have any other children that I could find in censuses, and listed as a painter. And then Oliver Petty died at 49, like also young, in 1920, and appears to have had another wife and a child. So you know, that's kind of them, and I'm sure they carried some kind of something along with them,
maybe
for this drama, maybe not. and then Kate herself died March 23, 1965 in New York. So she was in her mid-90s. And there's this, I will say, someone shout out to find a grave. Someone did like a lot of, took a lot of time to actually take the census information that I found and like just wrote it out on each of their pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really nice. And then someone on Ancestry had a photo they connected of Katie, what it seems to be Katie, and it was, you know, her parents were all listed and everything, so it seems legit.
Wow.
I reached out. I did not get a confirmed answer yet, but I can only imagine and hope that this photo
is the only one I have,
Katie. And it's really her. And let me just show you for a reaction point here.
Wow.
I don't know what time period it was, but she just looks to be young.
Yeah.
And even if she was getting married 12, 13, 14, 15, and so on, she just seems to be one of those people who have like a young features,
yes,
right?
Yes, she does look.
But it matches brown hair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't really tell what eye, you know, it's a black and white photo.
Looks very like Mona Lisa, like half a smirk.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
So I don't know. But it was definitely intriguing, and again, wish I could just be there to actually have chatted to these people.
I know, right?
The questions I would ask, which is a shout out to people out there listening. If you're interested in family history, do it now while you have some of your closer relatives still with you, because there are so many questions I wish I could ask my family,
right,
that are no longer with us that I would have loved to hear.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right.
Passing it over to you. I'm interested to see what you found.
That was a great story, Danielle.
Thanks.
You had a lot of good details, people's names you were able to find. Mine's similar, but on the other side of things, the bigamist was a man.
Oh, so glad we have opposite viewpoints.
Opposite sides of this. So, you know, you mentioned you wanted to do the theme of bigamy. So, of course, I'm like trying to find something where it's that and it's not just, you know, brought to trial. This one, I just kept digging and finding names and more names. So this is the first article that piqued my interest. It's called Wages of Sin. This one was from March 31st, 1878.
Wow, so, you're going way back.
Yep, 1878. St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, okay, also never covered Minnesota.
Yep, but this is one of many places this
okay.
this man resides. Under many names. So we'll start with the first name I found.
Okay.
So we're in Minnesota. Dr. Charles Romer, a bigamist, was discharged from custody today, the grand jury not having found an indictment against him. In less than 5 years, Romer has actually had three living wives in five different states. But owing to the absence of witnesses and the conflict of state laws, he could not be indicted. So basically,
so he gets away with it?
He knows what he's doing, okay? So this man, let's like rewind here, bring it back. He's originally from Germany, born in Germany between 1834 and 1837-ish. Like there's no actual record of him, of that. So his first arrival in the United States was in, like 1859.
Okay.
So we'll start there. So one of the articles I found said he had 5 wives. So the first one being in 1872 in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. And he was actually under a different name then. He was going by Dr. Arnold. So he says he was a doctor. So there's several articles of like him advertising his practice. Yeah. So
he's legit a doctor. Okay.
I wouldn't go that far. Okay. So it says like there's a lot of articles saying, quote, from a prestigious German medical school, he's said to be a physician and surgeon. So yeah. So it says C.H. Romer, M.D. was one of his names. Physician, surgeon, a regular graduate of the medical university in Tübingen, Germany. So then it has like his office location. That one was in Arkansas. So I've found.
I need a map.
Yeah. No, he's been on every part of this country. He's been in Montana. He's been in Missouri. He's been in Oregon. He's been in Arkansas.
Does he have enough money to travel?
Listen. He's what they call a swindler, okay? He shows up in a town. So I first found an article. He was in, Montana? It was like one of the first articles that said he showed up. He says he's this doctor from Germany. He's trying to get his practice going. So he asks other, you know, fellow Germans in the town if they can, you know, support, give a little money. And then he would start sweet talking the ladies. Yes. So he had a habit of being very flirtatious and easily would convince a young woman to marry him. So the first ones were
probably going after wealthy
the first ones don't seem
he's practicing.
That way.
He's
yes, exactly. So I'd only found marriages after 1870, but there seems to be there was a family tree that she was related to this individuals, and he had so many different names that in her tree here, she had said his name was Charles H. Henry Carl Heinrich Romer Reimer Ryan Doctor A.K.A. Fazy Arnold. So he had so many names.
That's more than a handful,
right? That's like this guy was legit a swindler and knew what he was doing. Like you said, he would, you know, he would marry young ladies. He would marry older ladies. He would marry widowers. Yeah. So I'm going to stick with the 5 that I did a little bit more research on.
You would
go
crazy and not have enough time if you.
So the one he married in Cedarburg, Wisconsin as Dr. Arnold she was not married to him long. Her name was Augusta Trotman.
Okay.
And, you know, their ceremony was in Grafton, Wisconsin. And then only a couple years later, there was a divorce decree for desertion. So he had already hightailed out of there. And he'd already been gone for, looks like, several years because during that time he had gotten other things happening. So that started, so he married her in 1872, and then as Dr. Charles Rehm in Buffalo, New York, he married a woman from Berlin Station, Ontario, and married her in 1873. And this one was considered not a legal marriage because his first wife was still alive, and, you know, but then the marriage was also confirmed in a Catholic church five days later,
which we know that they kind of do a bit of background when
right
well
his name
married.
Was different, so it's
That's
hard
true.
To like
a different...
Dr. Arnold, Dr. Rehm, like they're not gonna if they call up right. and they don't even know where he's from. He says he's German. He could have
right.
just said got here from Germany. I don't know. I couldn't get her name, and I also looked at several family trees, and her name was always the Berlin Station, Ontario wife. Like, her name never showed up. and there was no, it wasn't considered legal, so he didn't need a divorce decree from that one, so that one
just was,
didn't count. Happened and the one done. From 1873 didn't count, so that was his second one that I had seen originally until I uncovered this woman's research, which was even more than I can imagine. So the third marriage, now we're in 1874 still, but the divorce decree from marriage one was finalized in April.
Okay.
And he married the third wife 5 days before the divorce decree. Oh. So we got a marriage on April 16th, 1874. But she was just thrown off. So that
was he still doctor at this point?
Yeah, he's still calling himself a doctor.
I can just imagine.
Yeah.
What if he's using this doctor, not even to like boat about himself, but to meet the women, like from like a practice standpoint?
Okay, this gets even weirder with this one. Ready? Mm-hmm. So they're married in April the 16th of 1874, and her name is Joanna Paul.
Okay.
And I found her death record, July 24th, 1874. That is 3 months after she marries this Dr. Romer. We'll just call him Dr. Chaz, because that's what he like refers to him as, is Chaz. Dr. Chaz.
Sounds good. Okay.
And all the things. So Dr. Chaz is with this woman for 3 months, and now she's mysteriously just dead. Like that seems weird. Right. And she's a wealthy woman. And so it says there's an article of he inherited her estate.
This feels like a Lifetime movie.
he's got all her money now of this.
Wow.
Those woman who was older than him. I don't know how much older, but I have.
Did it say the date, reason of death?
She was 46.
Okay.
And it says, Mrs. Romer was sick for about 3 weeks and was faithfully attended by the doctors Ford and Rogin. So why was she attended by her husband, two other doctors? But her disease baffled all attempts at restoration. She was born in Germany in 1828, and she leaves friends to mourn her with her husband and her sister in the city.
I'm just having this feeling like every episode we do somehow should like relate back to poison.
I'm just like, really, was he giving them poison?
Yeah, weird.
Like,
3 weeks of a weird, unidentified.
And he's a doctor, so maybe he had to do enough research. Like maybe he did know how to easily kill someone.
And now has her, after these couple practices, goes after actually wealthy.
Okay, and that's the third wife. Let's, we're not done yet. Okay. Dr. Chaz has got
a history.
Got some more going to do. So that was, where were we? Oh, we were in Columbus, Indiana.
Okay.
Now we are.
So it's kind of moving.
Yeah. Now we're going to St. Louis.
Okay.
Of Missouri. Okay. So now this is the following year. So we're in July of 1875. He married a Isabella Chesley. So
Dr. doesn't he go by Dr. Chaz?
Dr. Chat. Well, he's Chaz. Charles. Okay. Chaz was his nickname, I guess.
Okay.
So he married her. There was even information about, there was like a decree of divorce from her as well. So wife
number
four.
Don't they look at the number of these? Well, I guess he's changing his name every time.
But he was still Romer there. But then, so that we were, the third wife, he was also Charles H. Romer. This one, he's just sticking with Romer. Maybe he thinks he's far enough away. They won't know. But she was dead already. So
right. So now who's going to chase after
him? He's a widower. Yep. So whatever. So the divorce decree was given less than 2 years later, so January 29th of 1877. Okay, but that was just enough time. So she had gotten that divorce from him, and he marries Barbara Ants. Okay, but
oh my god,
this led to a whole nother whole nother predicament for him.
And this is number
five.
Okay.
Yep. So Barbara is number five. So we have five wives, and the reason why he can't be sent to the penitentiary. Dr. Chaz H. Romer, the man with five wives, was recently discharged at Winona, Minnesota. The prosecuting attorney, A.H. Snow, made the following statement showing why the scamp escaped punishment. So this one, you know, we're in Minnesota here. May it please the court, I should not, under ordinary circumstances, deem it necessary to state the reasons for the grand jury's not finding an indictment in any case. But the case of the person calling himself Dr. Charles Romer is one in which and attracted much attention, and as no witnesses have been called to testify against him before the grand jury just discharged, I think it is due to the court and to the public, and perhaps myself as the prosecuting officer of the county, that such statement should, in instance, be made, entertaining the view and availing myself of the authority given. He will honor and give the facts. So, a few weeks since, the man, Romer, after waiving examination from George H. McKay, Esquire, Justice of the Peace, he was held to answer at the term of the court in the charge of polygamy. The complaint before the action was taken and was made by himself, by myself, and alleged that in the month of March, 1877, Charles H. Romer, having then a wife living in the city of Chicago, Illinois, unlawfully married one Barbara Ants. So this is the...
Yeah, the last, the current one.
Yep, and he cohabited with her after, as his wife, in this city and county. This complaint was represented by me in good faith, and it is believed that Romer at one time said his marriage with Mrs. Ants had lawful wife in Berlin Station, Ontario. So we already mentioned, you know, that initially. So this is where I found the five wives, all the dates. Yeah. So they were trying to get him prosecuted.
Right.
In several different states because...
And no one's coming to...
Right. And no one came to do an indictment. And
one was didn't want to be known, obviously, because she didn't put her name. The other one was dead. No longer there.
We've got dead
wives. And one of them who probably just didn't want to do nothing or never heard.
We've got divorce decrees, dates that are, like, just missing. And like, he knew what he was doing. He knew how to work a system.
So he didn't really have a house, probably. He literally was just meeting women properly.
Yep.
Jumping in with them to...
Get some money.
Get married and get money.
And he got a lot of money from the Joanna. But I think, you know, after 3-4 years, it's running out. So he marries Barbara Ants. And then there's another article not too long after the, like, release saying that, hold on, let me find it here real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had mentioned he had married Barbara Ants. That was in April of 1877. So I found an article in Winona, again, the Winona Daily Republican. This is dated June 4th, 1878. So the death of Mrs. Romer.
Oh.
Mrs. Barbara Romer, wife of Dr. Charles, died about 1 o'clock this morning, Tuesday. She has been ill since last Thursday when she gave birth to a child who only lived 36 hours. Since that time, Mrs. Romer had suffered from a complication of the troubles. So it talks about the doctors were trying to attend to her. A Monday afternoon, a doctor and then a lawyer was called so they could draw up a will because she was a widower also. She had been married before that.
Okay.
So she had children from another marriage. So... When he arrived, she was in a semi-conscious state and, you know, they were talking to her about what she wanted to do with a will. So she desired to give her husband, Dr. Romer, $3,000, but it says he declined and told her to give it all to the children. So Mrs. Romer bequeathed, and then it goes through who she gave all her money to.
Yeah.
So to her sister, to her niece, to her children.
$3,000 back then?
No, that was just... $3,000 back then was actually quite a bit. So she had about $20,000 total.
And right, back that's, then. That could carry you a long way.
Right. I looked it up. It's over 600,000 now.
Wow.
So he was going to get...
why would he decline it? It's not his characteristic. I don't unless think... he's trying to set up a...
Well, we'll get there.
Okay, he is. He is trying to set something up.
So it goes, she did pass away. So Mrs. Romer was 46.
And that would have been his child, sorry.
Yes. Okay. And then I found his death record. His only ever
child that he's so far had with all these women.
There's marriages from, I'll go back, that because I only uncovered those today.
Okay.
There's some marriages to women on the West Coast. So either, it was either Montana or he was in Seattle for a bit. There was an Oregon story. So we've got several women telling many tales. Like, everyone's like, scoundrel, just.
Yeah, that's downright crazy.
Swindling people out of money. There was even a story of him pretending to be, he was a refugee from Mexico, and he was showing pieces of silver so that they would believe that he was from Mexico, and he was trying to get people to help him, you know.
Wow.
So this poor woman passed away.
Mm-hmm,
but there's articles saying that a few months later, he had actually taken money from from her estate and was like reestablishing himself. Really? Yeah. So he did take some money, even though that article,
he was so genuous to try to give it off to somebody else.
Well, even this article might have just been just someone
throwing in some more detail.
Maybe he swindled
the writer. Throw you a couple bucks if you I'll throw you a couple bucks if you put a good note in there. Or
maybe
for me.
He wrote it. He sent it in. Did you know? Like,
doctor,
I don't know.
News editor, news reporter.
Yeah. So he just went around everywhere. I found this. It's like the words of the article are over a picture, but I'm not sure if it's supposed to be a picture of him. But this one says, Dr. Reem, the bilk, who married a young lady at Seattle under false pretenses, is still on the love path, wandering around on foot, purchasing, as he says, cattle. The feeling of indignation is turning into one of pity. That was one from a story in the People's Journal.
That's fair.
That was earlier on. That was back in 1871. Before they even
uncovered the other ones.
Yeah, before even. So I have marriage records.
And he's got no family that came over with him.
Apparently not. He just kept
able to do what he.
Yeah, he just pleases. Kept looking around for vulnerable women and making the most of their money, basically. Crazy. Taking all their money. So on this user in Ancestry, so she on here it says there's a common DNA ancestor, so she is related to this Dr. Chaz in one way or another.
Yeah.
So on her record there's Catherine Snyder is the first spouse, so supposedly there's a daughter from that marriage. Okay. A May Reem Bonte, so it seems like she got married. Mm-hmm. She was born in 1862, so that was right after he came to America. And then there's another Schneider, a Barbara Schneider, so it looks like there's a Josephine and John, two children from that marriage. Then there's a Louise Lackner, looks like there's a couple children from that marriage. Then there's a Sophia Albertina Moss. There's a son from that marriage.
Wow.
Then we start with the one I thought was the first, Augusta. So Augusta Trotman was, what number were we on already? So that was one, two,
she would have been
three,
five?
Four, five. So the one I thought was the first
was
wife,
the fifth
wife. Okay. So then we have the poor Berlin Station, Ontario wife. One day I'll find her name. That was the only one. Joanna Paul was next, then Isabella Chesley, then Barbara Arntz, and that was Charles, their son, passed away after only 3 days. Mm. And then he looks like he married just one more time here.
So you think. No,
Jenny Mary Hadsdatter Lindstad Ray Martin, so... Maybe they might have had a child. I'm not 100% sure on that last marriage, but it's in there. So that would have brought us to...
We wouldn't surprise you, right?
10 marriages.
So your guy, let's just say this. Your guy who is marrying multiple, kind of technically at the same time, marrying...
Right. Well, he was just banking on the fact that they would divorce them at some point.
He cannot go to jail But yet my little 12-year-old.
Yeah. Well, he bounces too. He doesn't stay in the same place.
It's just wrong.
He's not even in the same county. Like, they're talking about him being wanted in Kentucky. I don't even know. I don't even have Kentucky on my list of places he was. So, like, what was he doing in Kentucky?
I want to see a picture. Did you find pictures?
This is all.
You said that one that's overlaid. This overlaying.
Is it. It's like, I think it's just a drawing. Like, they just kind of. Oh. There's no picture. Yeah, picture.
I can't really see that great.
It's because he didn't stay anywhere.
Nobody could capture him enough.
But this was. His son, supposedly, but it's like a really old, it's an old man picture, so maybe he looked like,
oh yeah, if you had to,
like this gentleman, if I had to, you know. Yep. This was his son, so
okay,
his name was John Welfare, so
okay. Yeah. Crazy. That's a lot of wives.
Yeah, it's a lot of planning. How do you keep all that under?
That's exhausting.
In the track. Well, this, his son married once and had like 10 children. So, I mean,
do you think though, this is back then when there were no records, right? Do you think they ever found out that they might have multiple half siblings or anything out there?
Oh no.
Like, did they know? Not. No, probably they probably not. Didn't even know.
He wasn't in the same, he didn't really stay in the same place.
And he's not
place,
going so. To a new state saying, oh, hey, I just had a widowed wife.
No, he's not disclosing anything that's going to hurt him. Not until like. Maybe he gets sick of a one wife and he says, I'm out of here. I'm going back to so-and-so. Like, who knows what these... Like,
that was a good one. That's a good...
It's back and forth and back and forth and...
And there's definitely probably still more out there.
Oh, yeah. And no one even knows, like, after...
And not even considering wives. Like, imagine girlfriends, too, probably just to get some kind of relationships to ask for things.
Yikes. Yeah, there's a lot going on in his life. I don't understand. And then it looks like he was in like a soldier's home in Nebraska, maybe in the early 1900s. Another person was asking for a divorce. So his last wife was asking for a divorce.
Oh my gosh.
So she does end up getting one in 1906. And there was a notice here. What is this last notice? I just want to pull up. It was in Omaha, Nebraska. Like, here, there, and everywhere.
Seriously.
Oh, it's just to notify of the divorce decree. It was nothing crazy. Wow. I just hadn't opened that article. I wasn't sure if it was going to be
a
shocker. Like, he murdered someone. Can never give up. Crazy. Yeah, so he was an interesting character. He definitely swindled and stole and lied and cheated and... You know, he didn't even have to go to jail.
What if he changed his appearance too, as he was like becoming a new person, right?
And the papers loved to say that he was stocky and attractive and would pull in these, you know, cute, young, beautiful women somehow. So he must have been a smooth talker. That's imagining.
Crazy. Yep, that's the true definition.
Yeah. So we don't even know his death is unknown. Like,
if you're out there listening,
I mean, this person on Ancestry did a lot of research, didn't find it, there.
Well, he's probably got some other name, right, that no one even has on record.
Yeah. He said, who knows what state he was even in when he died. That's
true. You can't even, like, narrow it down.
He was many places, so many things to so many people. This man. Were you even a doctor, Dr. Chaz?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would say no. Oh, yeah, man. Well done. Yeah, that was a great one.
Thanks. It was fun looking to... The wildlife of him.
Yeah, no. I can imagine your rabbit holes in. Yeah. Just listening, I'm like, whoa. It's a lot of research to do. Very good. All right. Yeah. Well.
That wraps us up, right? That wraps us up.
Yep. And I just want to say, remember, it's not a matter of, you know, if you will find a shadow in your family tree, but when, because behind every family tree, there are shadows. So if you have a story, make sure you reach out to us on Facebook or shadowsfromthetree@gmail.com.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.